The Pastor's Heart and Dominic Steele here, and thanks very much for joining us. We're coming to you a little early this week. We wanted to get this out, not on Tuesday afternoon, but early, because we want to be helpful to senior ministers in the run-up to Easter. We're talking today to two of Australia's leading Christian communicators, Mike Rader in Melbourne and Sam Chan in Sydney, and I want to talk to them about the difference that COVID-19 has made to people and then the whole phenomena of how the whole exercise of communication, preaching, our role as Christian communicators changes as a result. Particularly, we'll jump into what it means for preaching and communicating this Easter. Before we get to them, though, we'd love you to support us in the Pastor's Heart Ministry. It does cost us to put this together. There are three of us who work on this little program, and if you're able to help, well, that we'd not just like that, we'd need that. And if you were able to help, I don't know, $5 a month or something would be a great place to start. You could go to patreon.com/thepastorsheart. Now, Sam Chan is here with me in Sydney.
G'day.
It's good to have you. And in Melbourne, we have Michael Rader. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Glad to be with you.
Now, Mike, why don't we start with you? And I want us to start, as we start each of these episodes, with the Pastor's Heart and what God has been doing on your heart in this season that we've been journeying through. How have you been wrestling with God in this season?
Well, Dominic, perhaps surprisingly, I've been doing less wrestling and more resting. I think, like a lot of people in ministry, it's pretty full on. I don't get times of rest. Often the weekends I'm out preaching and teaching. And as I get older, my body gets more tired and my mind gets more tired. And I don't get sabbatical in my work or long service leave. So for me, kind of an enforced slowdown has been actually really refreshing. Already I'm finding my mind and body healthier. Down the track, whether that will last, how I'll feel 2 months down the track with a quieter life. But right now, it's been for me a bit of a, to be frank, a bit of a gift from God.
Mm. Sam Chan, what's God been doing on your heart in this season?
Well, it's amazing because I've had compulsory rest as a compulsory Sabbath where you get to rest, but you got to trust God to provide. I work with City Bible Forum. I'm an events-based speaker. All my events have just been cancelled for the next 6 to 9 months. And I thought, that's okay. I've still got 1 or 2 days a week where I work as a doctor. But just overnight, with almost no warning, we've shut down all elective surgery. So I'm now out of work, like with no warning. So I've got no income stream. But 2 weeks ago, I was in Adelaide preaching on Fear of the Future, where I told everyone the verses that Jesus had, where he said, you know, don't worry about what to wear, what to eat, don't worry about tomorrow, tomorrow will worry about itself. And suddenly, overnight, those verses now apply to me. So I'm being forced to trust God, trust exactly what Jesus said in those words that I told other people to trust.
I've had the same kind of exercise, really. Just I spoke this morning on Matthew 6 and do not worry. And it is complex not worrying when suddenly you're responsible with a church budget that's in free fall.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about the cultural change that COVID-19 has brought. Mike, perhaps we could start with you.
I find it very hard to predict the future, predict how the culture will change. I think we have to wait and see. At the moment, I think we're all trying to come to grapple with the changing situation. I wonder if the panic is beginning to subside a bit. The panic buying is subsiding. It's very early days. I think we'll see 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the track, maybe a year down the track, the impact that this pandemic has had on us. At the very beginning, I think I'm loath to say too much. Let's see down the track what's happened and what God has taught us, and hopefully what God has taught our world through this.
Sam Chan, you were in America at the time of September 11, and you were telling me that you can see parallels between what we're going through now here and September 11 all that time ago.
Yeah, so I was in America when 9/11 happened, and just overnight, crowds disappeared. So just like it has happened with COVID-19. But more than that, suddenly it was okay to talk about God again. In America, they have this fierce, you know, separation between church and state. But suddenly, on the first Sunday after 9/11, churches were packed. It was standing room only. I remember downtown Chicago, everyone just came out of the workplace and they had a minute's silence, and someone prayed at the end of that minute's silence, and suddenly no one was saying, whoa, you can't ram your religion down, you know, my throat. Suddenly it was okay to be religious again. And I remember driving down an empty freeway and where there's a traffic data sign, normally with traffic information, suddenly were the words, in God we trust. So suddenly people were looking for a shared narrative, something transcendent that could give them meaning, and everyone looked to God and the church again.
Last week, I spoke to Philip Jensen about some of these zeitgeist changes, and he spoke about the shift from individualism to community. I mean, that I'm not asserting I want to do what I want at every point, but I'm prepared to actually give up some of my freedoms in order to keep other people healthy. That is actually a significant change. We've had, our whole materialism, the bubble's been burst there, and actually also a focus on the seriousness of life. That does make a difference for us as preachers, though. Perhaps we could start with you, Michael, some of those.
Yes. In the short term, that's right, Dominic. And maybe, unlike 9/11, which once was a one hit, and then the dust began to settle, as it were, with the pandemic, this could last for months and months and months. And that'll give us a chance to test to what extent people have changed. People will they continue to be more community-minded? Will they be less materialistic? Will this bring about any kind of lasting change in the souls of people? Maybe it will, because it'll be a long-term pandemic. Or will, once this dust has settled, people just will revert to their normal habits? We wait and see. But it may be a long-term pandemic will bring about some more long-term benefits or effects.
What do you reckon, Sam?
Well, it's interesting. It's forced us to switch from being a loose control to a tight control country. There's this lady, I wish I could remember her name. She says the whole world can be divided into tight versus loose cultures. Tight cultures, typically, you're densely populated, you have finite resources, your actions have consequences, negative impact on others, you're under threat from external powers and invasions from pathogens. Loose cultures is the opposite. But suddenly, overnight, we've been forced to behave like a tight culture. And I think, as Simon Gillam, it's forced us into a culture shock where we're forced to adjust by what's going to happen. So we're like missionaries being forced to navigate being in a foreign country. Australia feels like a foreign country overnight. So I think you've got at least that. Maybe also going on is this sense of loss of control. Like typically up until now in the West, life has been so predictable. We have so much control. We even map out, our 2020 vision calendar, and suddenly that's been ripped up, and now we've lost control. We've suddenly realised the fragility of life and just the contingency there is in life. You can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone next week anymore.
So how do you think it's going to change it for us as Christian communicators, Sam?
Well, what's changed almost overnight is, Paul in Corinthians says, to the non-believer in your audience. So your implied audience has always been, there is a non-believer out there, so make sure we know we're actually preaching to both believers and non-believers. And maybe in our churches, the non-believer might be 10% of the visible congregation. Now, just overnight, the non-believer is probably 90% of our population, because I've noticed with our church, when we upload our church online, suddenly we're having 1,000 hits when our congregation's only 100. City Bible Forum put up something where normally there are 90 people who turn up. We've had 2,000 people watching. So the implied audience now might be 90% of the people listening to you are non-Christians. Also, what's changed with the online medium is we are now no longer the host. People aren't coming to us to do church. We're the guest and they're the host. And they've invited us into their room, but they've invited us in, meaning they want to hear a message. So suddenly we're not the enemy. They're not hostile to us. They're actually wanting to hear from us. It's a very different dynamic. One, we're inviting ourselves in, yes, but they have opened the door, and now they really do want to hear what we have to say.
You're talking there about a difference in how I might posture myself in the presentation. What, land it for me. What are some of the postural changes that you'd make?
They're saying, okay, I know you have something, now please tell me what to do. It's almost like in Acts 16, you have Lydia, the business person who wants to be, who gets reasoned into the gospel with a, well, you know, with a rational discussion from Paul and his followers. Then you have the slave girl has a power encounter and she has demons cast out of her. But the third guy in Acts 16 is a jailer who sees Paul and Silas when his whole life is crumbling literally around him and he's lost his job. Here are two people singing. And it's almost like people noticing, hey, you Christians, while all this is falling apart, you guys are singing. You're still doing church. Tell me more. Like, what is it that you guys have? So the posture that's changed is I think people are open now when they might have been, you know, barriers up before. And now I think it's time we preach significance. So typically, with Easter coming up, we've concentrated, like rightly so, so much on data and information. You know, this is Jesus, Son of God. He's died for you, rose again 3 days later. He lives for you. Now give your life to him. Be loyal. That's the data. But I say that's like me telling, someone telling me about my car. It's fuel injected. It's got coil spring suspension. It's got ABS brakes. And I'm saying, yes, but what does that mean? And you can land it by saying, okay, that means your car will start in the morning. You can get to work safely and there's room for your kids now. I think what people want to hear now is, why do I need Easter? Like, and I like to flip around. Sometimes I preach that. What would happen if there was no Easter? What would life look like? And now we're getting, say,
because we've almost got no Easter.
Yeah, that's right. So, and the person coming to an Easter service wants to know what difference Easter makes. I think this is the chance now for us to preach significance, the difference Easter makes.
Michael.
Well, I think more chances will come down the track. Now our computers are awash with Christian messages. The people can be exposed to them. I think as this thing drags on and the boredom sets in and the frustration and the anxiety, I think people's desire for answers will actually increase as the months go by. So we've seen the initial panic. That's now passing. But I think sitting at home day after day after day, concerned about your income, inactivity, that's going to be harder. That frustration will be harder to cope with. And they'll turn to their computer screens for answers. So I think the longer we go on, the more the opportunities for the gospel will increase.
What would you say to the many preachers who are watching or listening to us now, who are going to be preparing for Friday morning and Sunday morning this weekend, speaking into this climate? I'm doing the second last bit of Matthew 27 and the first bit of Matthew 28, and I'm all open for suggestions from you guys.
Yeah, the person turning up to Easter, they it's almost like, you know, they're assuming the data. They're assuming Jesus is God. They're assuming he died on the cross. They're assuming he rose again. They're saying, now, please, how does that answer my questions? And I think that there's a simple questions like, where is God in all of this? Would be question number one. And I would say, you are so correct. Where is God? Because really, there are only two choices. Choice number one, there is no God. We're just atoms and molecules. We're just another species of life on this planet. We're just a blip in the timeline of this universe. And guess what? The universe does not care about you. Viruses come and go in the ebb and flow of life. Species come, species go. The universe does not care. That's choice number one. Choice number two, you know what? There's a God, and he does care. So one of those beautiful things in the Easter stories where that thief looks at Jesus and says, remember me. And I say, guys, here's a God who will remember you. I go to work where people can't remember my name. You know, my teacher can't remember my name, but the God of the Christian God of the universe remembers your name. And then I tell people, you know, I know of no other religion where there's a God who cares. In Greek mythology, the gods don't care. Asian mythology, the gods don't care about you. And if you want no God, the universe doesn't care. But here's a God who remembers your name, and Jesus became one of you. And I tell people the second question of COVID is, who am I? You know, what is a human being? And again, do I just want to be another species of life? But he is a God who becomes one of us. And I say, you know, and I make fun of high school speeches, which says, you're special, we're all special, but we're all special. You know, none of us are special anymore. Guess what? We're not special. But here's Jesus who takes on our atoms and molecules, you know, our armpit hair, our acne, our BO, because we're so special to him. And I think that's what people want. There's a God who cares. Jesus is special. But most importantly, you know, there is suffering programmed into this life. But God won't take away suffering, but he'll be with us there in the suffering. And somehow this is part of a bigger story. And that's what Easter does. It gives us the bigger story. We're just one jigsaw puzzle piece in a bigger story. We can connect with something way bigger than just what we have going on here. So maybe that's what I'll give Pil, that, you know, there's hope, there's purpose, and there's identity, despite all of what's been going on.
Mike?
If I were preaching this Friday, Dominic, and I'm not, but if I were, I'd be preaching on Psalm 130. Actually, I heard my son preach on that psalm this morning. It was terrific, actually, but I'm biased. It begins, out of the depths, I cry to you, Lord, hear my voice. Well, that just picks up our emotions right now. Out of the depths, I cry to you, be attentive to my cry for mercy. That's a world in pain, a people in pain. Then he says, if you, Lord, kept a record of my sins, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness. And this virus is a result of our sin. This is God's judgment on a sinful world. And then he says, I wait for the Lord. As I said, this is a long-term suffering, a long-term pandemic, and we have to wait for God to come, and he will come. And then the last verse is, put your hope in the Lord. In his unfailing love, with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all their sins. What a terrific psalm for a world crying out in suffering, a world that will have to wait. There's a God you can hope in who will forgive your sins because of Good Friday, because Christ died on the cross. It just picks up so many of the way our world is feeling, our pain, our suffering, our hopes, our tears, and provides the one answer the Bible gives, which is the cross of Christ. So what I'm saying, I would acknowledge on Friday, I'd acknowledge the virus and the pandemic. And we speak in the context of that. And we can't speak this weekend and pretend we're not in a crisis. We must acknowledge that, but then take people to the God who forgives their sins and gives them hope.
What about you, Sam? What passages would you be particularly drawn to at the moment?
I'll be drawn either, again, to Acts 16, just the slave girl who gets liberated from the demons. And I think there's something very attractive to Asians about that. So we live in fear and we want a God who's in power, and God's power liberates us from our fear. Or maybe the jailer in Acts 16, his whole life is crumbling. He's just lost his job. And I think many of us understand how that feels right now. And he sees Paul and Silas singing. He says, okay, what do I need to do to be saved? You guys obviously have something I don't have that's going on. So that could be one option. The other option I like around Easter is just looking at the two thieves crucified either side of Jesus. And I say, you know, there's a scandal going on here. One scandal is this thief gets saved. He goes to paradise. But maybe as Australians, that's not so scandalous. Well, we're always rooting for the underdog. So we cheer this guy on, and our hero is Stephen Bradbury, who by doing nothing wins the Winter Olympic gold medal. And this thief has done the same thing. He's done a Stephen Bradbury. So how about let's concentrate on the other thief? He's a scandal. The other thief doesn't get in. And to our Western sense of egalitarianism, that's a scandal. Like, if this thief gets in, why shouldn't this thief also get in? And I say that's our Western privilege, our Western sense of entitlement, our Western sense of exceptionalism kicking in. Well, guess what? The rest of the world doesn't have that entitlement. They get why this thief doesn't get in. And the virus is the wake-up call for all of us. None of us exempt. There is no exceptionalism. There is no entitlement. And in a world like the Western world of perfectionism, and Will Storr, not a Christian author, in his book on selfie, talks about this, where, you know, you have to accept me for who I am, basically because I am perfect. Well, guess what? This is a wake-up call. We're not perfect. We're not okay, and the virus is a wake-up call. But guess what? The hope, the beauty of Easter is, for the first time in our lives, it's okay to say we're not okay. We're not the person we pretend to be. We're not the person God needs us to be. As Romans says, we fall short. And for the first time in our lives, it's okay to admit, I'm not okay, I'm not perfect. Jesus is perfect. If I trust in him and my life is in Jesus, Jesus is perfect, so I don't have to be perfect anymore, and I don't have to pretend to be perfect anymore. I can be just as broken as this thief who gets in rather than the other thief who pretends everything's okay.
Now, you guys, as both as part of your roles, coach other ministers and communicators in what they're doing. Over the last few days, I'm imagining you've been looking at a number of ministers online doing this either very well or very badly. You don't need to name, actually, you don't name the people who've done it badly, but what have you seen that has been worked and not worked as we've together been reeling through this process?
Well, obviously there's all that technical stuff, and maybe there's no need to really go into that, like framing, lighting, make sure there's good audio, worry about what's behind you, you don't want too busy a background. So obviously there's that. But I think the big things that have worked are, this is a change of format, and we need to understand, just as we change from written to video, this is a different form of video format. We're no longer speaking to a large room of, say, 200 people. We're actually inviting ourselves into someone's living room. And that person might be in pyjamas with snacks around them. So it's a very different setting. And it's a time to be a bit more warm, a bit more relational, and knowing that we have to invite them in. And also, people have clickers in their head, and they're working out within 1 or 2 minutes whether they want to listen to us. And they're probably listening to us at 1.5 speed or 2.0 speed anyway. So the biggest thing, I think, is our sermons. And I know it's a sacred cow for many people out there. Our sermons might have to be one half to one third the length they usually are. And also, usually on video, there's always a changing point of view so much now that this really is a time for visuals. So we're blessed with someone in post-production who can just overlay the occasional visual while we're talking just to mix it up. I think that really, really helps.
Mike, you got insights in this space for us too. You've been coaching a group of preachers in Singapore this last week, and I'm imagining as you've done this preaching school in Singapore, people have been asking these kind of questions.
Yes, they are. I think it's a brand new world for preachers. They're used to getting up in a church in a pulpit with a congregation there in front of them. So the questions are, how do I communicate through a camera, through a phone? And the few things to say, the first is to decide, well, what medium will you use? Will you use your iPhone? Will you use Zoom? Will you have a camera go more high tech? And recognizing that each medium you use has a different quality. So for the pastor's heart, we spent the previous half an hour getting the sound right, the picture right, because this is a fairly professional show. Is that what you want? The phone's okay, but you've got to sacrifice quality. So it depends what you want. If you want to have a conversation with your people, then the phone is okay. I'm speaking at a convention, an Easter convention in a few weeks' time, through video cameraing. Well, that's simulating a convention. I'm not using a phone. I've got tape talks. I'm standing up in front of a lectern into the camera, pretending I'm speaking to a large auditorium. That may be what you want. So decide, first of all, the kind of medium you want to use. But whatever one you use, you change the way you communicate. You have to be closer to the camera. You have to be slower, more deliberate hand movements. All these longer pauses. The different medium will shape the way you deliver the talk. And when we are novices of this, but we're going to learn some important lessons in the months ahead.
Have you got any insights as to how this will change church life and us as preachers, fast forward a year into the future?
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm just still thinking about all that technical stuff that really it's going to force us to be a lot more concise in our communication. We're going to have to say in one sentence what usually takes us 5 sentences, and we're going to say in 5 words what usually takes us 10 words. Maybe that's the first one I'm thinking of. But the other thing that's changed is we're always looking for that cultural, existential, emotional entry point. And I think that may have changed. So every age, every culture group, every decade sort of has a slightly different cultural, existential, emotional entry point. So it's interesting, like 20 years ago, people were trying to ask, how can I be successful? The last decade is, how can I be happy? And that's just led to more anxiety and stress, counterintuitively. I wonder what this decade's going to be. And what's interesting is maybe it's going to bring up things like, how can I be safe? How can I be clean? Because Jonathan Haidt in The Righteous Mind, fascinating, says, in the West, our concerns have always been justice and harm reduction. So therefore, I have the right to do whatever I want as long as no one's getting hurt. But other cultures have shame and honour because my actions have consequences on other people. And other cultures have a category of defilement. My actions are defiling something. So maybe it's going to put these things back in our emotional, moral language. Language of shame and honour, defilement and purity as well. So that's where I'm guessing right now.
Any thoughts on that, Michael?
Yeah, 3 things occur to me. I hope Sam is right, that it makes preachers sharper and more concise. There's a lot of fluff in sermons I hear. I think sometimes shorter is better. Secondly, I think after months of isolation, I hope people will long to be back together and to hear the person preach to them in a building, face to face. Social media is fine, but it's artificial. I think preaching should take place in the context of community, face-to-face, body-to-body. And I hope people come to appreciate that more after this crisis. And thirdly, I doubt this will be the last pandemic. We've had SARS, we've had this one. They may be coming with more frequency. As I said, I think they are warnings from God. The judgment is coming. I hope it'll help us to stop being scared of preaching judgment. Remind people that the day is coming, that this plague portends a far greater disaster on our world, which preachers are scared to announce, scared to talk about. And we've got to stop that fear. Not back to the days of fire and brimstone. Forget the balance the Bible has, that God has set a day in which he'll judge the world by a man he's appointed. And this reminds us of that. So I do hope it helps us to be more balanced in our preaching. Salvation from the wrath to come. And this is a vivid picture to us, a vivid illustration of the wrath to come.
Michael Rader, thanks very much for joining us. Mike Rader on the line there from Melbourne. And Sam Chan, thank you for joining us here in Sydney.
Thanks for having me.
You've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company on the Tuesday afternoon after Easter. We'll look forward to that. See you then.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.